Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the second season of Private Eyes. This is obviously a Private Eye television show. I think that's pretty obvious from the name. That is filmed up in Canada, stars Jason Priestley and Cindy Sampson. And it was based on a novel, and it was loosely based on the novel. We talked about the novel and the first season when we reviewed that. And second season had 18 episodes. And it's interesting because on the one hand, I would say this is a very standard PI procedural show. Here's the case for the episode. They go, they've got a couple of suspects. There's the twist, the whatever. They solve it. Boom. That's it. There's some continuing plot threads from episode to episode. You know, the family life, the relationship between the key players, that sort of thing.
I was going to say, that's more character development.
Yeah.
Than plot threads,
that's
really.
That's true. It's enough, though, to have continuing elements.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. It's character bits, not a plot line. It's not like there's an overarching big bad.
Right. And that's what allows it to stay so episodic.
Yes. What I find interesting about this is, on the one hand, from that level, it's just another run-of-the-mill TV show. But I think it's got better structured writing than a lot of TV shows.
They give more red herrings than most shows like this, and more plausible red herrings than most shows.
Also, enough clues early on, like the episode we watched this evening that had the brewery, mm-hmm. the craft beer and stuff. They asked the question early on of what's with Wayward Harry or whatever.
Wally, yeah.
You know, what happened with Wally? And that turned out to be a key aspect of the storyline.
Yeah.
So they explicitly introduced the question early on. And there are other episodes in which there's a resonance between what's going on with some of the characters and stuff like that. And a showing that they're not just, well, here's a basic plot line. Let's just run it by the numbers and be done with it.
Well, so many shows that I would kind of pigeonhole into this little genre don't spend as much time developing the characters.
Well, we've gotten to know Matt Shade, the lead character, Angie Everett, the other investigator, Matt's father, Matt's daughter, Matt's ex-wife,
mm-hmm.
Angie's cop friend who she's known since they were kids, another cop, there was a doctor who was former fiance or whatever of Angie. He was in a good half dozen episodes. They introduced a district attorney that dated Matt for a handful of episodes. And we get the feel that, well, actually, the daughter's boyfriend is there for quite a bit. They're developing these characters. It makes it the world feel real.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like we're just following what's going on in a day in the life of Matt Shade or whatever. And because there have been other shows, I think Without a Trace is a great example of a standard procedural. The mystery is, well, what happened to this person? They vanished without a trace. And that team we follow, we get a little bit of characterization over the, I don't even remember how many seasons that show ran.
But we had virtually no private life for the characters. And when we did, it was only, I want to say, in service to the moment.
It was key to the episode. When one of them had to deal with the father who had, you know, dementia or whatever setting in, that was that episode's subplot before it wasn't mentioned, after it maybe was touched on a time or two at best.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of show where it's all in service of the plot. The characters just facilitate the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Here, there's a lot of more character interaction and stuff.
Well, here, they could have done an episode where, as we have so often joked about other shows, where it's, oh, the writers must have forgotten the characters this week.
Yeah.
They have one character where Angie at the time was dating the doctor, mm-hmm. Ken. Matt was dating the district attorney, whose name isn't coming to mind.
Mel,
yes. Okay, so the four of them go out into the countryside on a double date weekend slash, oh, by the way, we're going to take care of a case while we're out there at the resort.
Yeah.
So they could have totally forgotten about the assistant and Maz for the episode because mm-hmm. they're back in town. They never called back to them for, hey, could you look this up? Or, hey, we need help, which is a device a lot of shows fall back on.
Right. But they got a subplot with those two that had kind of been kicked off by Matt and Angie.
Yes.
And that was kind of what they would cut to when they need to.
And it was a subplot that, while totally encapsulated and isolated for the two of them, it was also relevant to what the others were going on about.
Well, and it was stuff that had been set up in previous episodes. And I thought they did a really good job this season with, like, in one episode, they've got Matt and Angie having a lot of, like, middle-of-the-night conversations about cases, just about Jules and other, you know, what's going on in their families, you know, stuff. And then when they had that episode where they're out in the country and stuff, it was clear to the people they're dating that those two are eventually going to, you know, have the romantic entanglement or whatever.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel out of the blue in that episode because we'd seen, yeah, they're talking a lot more than just coworkers and stuff like that. So I feel that the writing team is cognizant of what's going on in previous episodes, what's going on in future episodes, and doing enough of, if this is what we want to do next week, if we just plant a few seeds here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and some of it is like where they end off with the relationship between Matt's daughter Jules and her boyfriend Liam at the end of this season was not telegraphed, but seeds for that setup had been planted throughout most of the season.
Yeah.
First her getting the boyfriend, and then, oh, she's going to go on this trip to Italy, and then they break up, and then this happens, you know. So it's not just out of the blue, it just, well, they had to do something for the subplot. There's an arc there and some good character moments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, again, a brilliant TV show. I think it's standard fare, but it's very well done standard fare.
Yes.
And that's what I think kind of sets this apart from a lot of other PI-type shows.
Well, and they play to the strengths of both the characters and the actors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jason Priestley has been on TV on and off since, what, the 80s with Sister Kate?
Yeah, he'd done some stuff before 90210.
So, I mean, long career. And the way they do those jokes about, I mean, I guess you're a celebrity, with the hockey stuff, mm-hmm. you can tell they're pulling a little real-world experience there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're a celebrity to some people jokes, they play it and they make it work.
Well, they've got sometimes where he's trying to cash in on that and they're like, who?
Mm-hmm.
And they have one time where he's gone undercover and gets recognized.
Yes.
Fortunately, they didn't totally blow his cover, but they have fun with that aspect. And they're able to have that sense of humor, have that almost whimsicalness without it becoming a farce or without undercutting some of the seriousness of some of the topics they deal with or just the stories they're trying to tell.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good balancing act, because even some of the stuff like they did near the end of the season with Maz and Zoe, the assistant at the office, those two are dating. Maz basically claims to have almost gotten mad cow disease to get out of donating blood.
Yes.
And there's a certain aspect of that that is just ludicrous with how he's spinning this yarn, yet not so ludicrous that it's like, yeah, come on.
Yep.
You know, and then when she's basically trying to get him to fess up or whatever and starts pushing him a little far, she realizes, wait, this guy actually does have a serious phobia about needles. Maybe, you know, and she backs off.
Yes.
And that's something that I think a standard writing team would have not done.
Well, and the way they did it, both in the writing and the acting, when she is saying, you know, I'm a horrible girlfriend for approaching it by mm-hmm. lying to you, he's like, actually, you're kind of the sweetest ever to try and help me face my fear.
Yes. He appreciates what she's trying to do, takes it for the gesture it was.
Yeah.
Apologizes for having lied outrageously to her in the first place.
Yes.
It made for, you know, kind of a sweet moment or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas I think other writing teams might have gotten to the point where, he's gonna, you know, man up, donate, and then faints or something, and then we get the you know, butt of the joke afterwards sort of deal.
Or other writing teams would have felt they had to break up because there's no room for forgiveness.
Oh, there's no trust. They lied.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They, and the fact that they could work through a situation like real people do.
Yeah, there's aspects of that relationship that is totally not what real people would do. The whole bit, again, in the episode when the main people are out in the country and they're in the escape room or whatever.
Yes.
You know, it shows kind of the OCD aspect of Zoe, and it was funny.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
But it was also a bit ludicrous.
You've got her OCD coming up against his, if I've got the girl coming back to me after we basically broke up, I will do anything, including flashing my cop badge to keep it going.
Yeah.
Yes. It was over the top, which is what made it sweet.
But again, in a way that is not so over the top to turn it into a farcical sort of a situation, even though it's ludicrous events. It's like, yeah, it's a stretch, but I'll give it to him.
Well, Zoe is OCD to the point that she first is introduced as a client.
Yes.
Who has hired them because her couch has moved 2 or 3 inches.
8 inches tops, but yeah. She's hearing things, other things going on at the building. And that one episode, which is the fourth one in, changed quite a few things for the season.
It did, actually.
Yeah. Introduced her. She then became the assistant at the office.
Well, she kind of hired herself and then let them hire her, but yeah. Yes.
It also introduced the diner that became one of the main sets they use for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, they got to liking it so much that Matt's dad bought into the place.
Because it used to be they had the PI office, Matt's house, and the police station.
Yes.
And then they added the diner. They used Becca's studio, the ex-wife's studio, enough that it's a recurring place.
Yeah.
But not like one of the almost, whether it's literally a standing set or not, the house, the office, and the police station.
Well, and Becca's studio changed a bit. In terms of sometimes there was standing room only, sometimes there were pseudo bleachers.
Yeah, sometimes there was an audience, sometimes there wasn't. That's one that is clearly not a literal standing set. They do as needed, which makes sense because a lot of this is the sort of thing they film kind of on location or in the office or the house.
Yeah,
it's funny because like with the police station, it's basically one room with hallways around it, and I swear at times they have walked all four of those hallways.
Yes.
Getting from what seems like point A to point B, but is really point A back to point A.
Yes, yeah.
Normally you don't notice, but sometimes it's like, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
But...
Well, and it's one of those silly things, but we've now been to the hospital enough times that I've started trying to figure out if they're using the same hospital they used for Listener.
Listener is the show that had the essentially telepathic ambulance driver, and the guy who plays Maz was on that show as basically the other ambulance driver for
yes.
it, which was another fun show.
Oh, it was. Yeah, that was great fun.
Now, one of the people who guest starred on that was also guest starred this season here for an episode, and that was the guy who played Spike from Flashpoint.
Yes.
So this season they had, again, one of the leads from Flashpoint. They had Supergirl from Smallville, who was also in Bitten. They had the lead from Eureka, who was also on Haven more recently for a little bit. They had William Shatner for an episode.
Yeah.
They had, it was funny because there was one where a substitute teacher goes missing. And it's like, she's familiar. I couldn't quite place her. She plays the cop on Cloak and Dagger, and she was also the yellow Dino Thunder Ranger for Power Rangers. Very next episode, we got the blue SPD Ranger for Power Rangers. So in two episodes in a row, just go figure.
Well, it was within a two or three episode range that we got two of the actors from The Good Witch. The guy who was representing the female boxer, and then one of the ladies in the neighborhood. Maybe it was like three, four episodes apart.
Okay, within a few, yeah.
Yeah, but I was surprised. I don't normally see actors from that show guest starring elsewhere.
Well, and this is all shot up in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were expecting any Power Ranger, really, Amy Jo Johnson is the one I would have figured.
Yeah.
She both lives there. She was on Flashpoint, which had filmed up there. One of her co-stars, you know. So
yeah.
They've got, I think, a good main cast. I think they've got a number of good, solid guests. And it's a well-done show, even if the inherent material is not just mind-blowing or anything of the sort. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's good light watching.
I think adding Zoe into the office has really worked. I was nervous at first.
I think they could have cast somebody I would like to watch better than that particular actress. She's doing okay.
She's doing the comic relief better than most of the other material.
Yes. They're playing her a little, and they set her up for how they're playing her.
Yes. So
they did fair for that. The actress is doing fine. Having somebody to act as a go-between between Matt and Angie makes sense.
Well, there was one episode where it seemed like her equivalent to opening hailing frequencies was, I would think the answer to that question is obvious.
Goes without saying.
Yes. Yes, and it was so funny.
Basically, Matt's trying to redo the look of the office. He tries to get her on her side. She basically says, nah, I'm not going to pick sides. And then Angie is like, oh, you've got to talk Mac out of this, you know, and she's doing the uber diplomatic.
Yes.
So there's some fun stuff they can do that way that they couldn't do first season because they didn't have somebody in that position.
Well, during the brewery episode, her dedication to the research.
Yes, she's tried all the different beers or whatever. What I thought was funny was when they then had to fake a new craft beer, and they do it by just mixing bits and pieces of other beers.
Yes.
Matt takes it to somebody he knows in the beer industry or whatever. The guy is, oh, I've got to see what thing Matt Shade's willing to endorse. And he's more of a wine guy than a beer guy, but, you know, let's try it. Takes it and just spits it out.
Yes.
Well, then you should go back to wine. As he's turning back around, and then Angie and Matt have just vacated.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, they got what they needed out of the talk with him.
Yeah.
And the mysteries are one that I think they've played fair enough at the beginning, usually, that you've got a sense of kind of where it's going to go or what twist it's going to be, but not telegraphed where it's obviously this.
Well, they did a good job, like, with the episode where the guy who had been paying rent on his dead fiance's apartment for a year is just sure she isn't dead and he saw her. And everybody else just thinks it's basically lovesick devotion.
Yeah, they had a couple of cases where nobody in their right mind would have taken them, but it pans out.
Well, and there were several cases where it's kind of either there's no way we're taking this, but almost the better angel on their shoulder gets them to take it, or there is that personal connection.
Yeah, yeah, or they're kind of in a position where they can't not take it.
Yeah.
The one where the kid hires them.
Yes.
Was kind of in that. And it was a fun twist. You know, again, a little, how come the dad's not really questioning the kid's hired the PI and all this stuff? It's like, yeah, well, you know, indulge the kid. Without overindulging the kid. And that, I thought, was an interesting balance.
Yeah.
So, there's so many standard procedurals on the air, it's hard for some to really stand out. And I don't think this has that standout aspect that A Person of Interest had, or even something like The Listener with the telepathic guy, or Monk with the uber OCD Sherlock Holmes-ish kind of a guy, or Elementary, which literally had Sherlock Holmes.
Or Psych,
or Mentalist, there's so many where they've got this twist on it.
Well, Psych was always fun because trying to see what he's seeing. And then eventually they would do the sort of the zoom in effect.
That was one that I definitely think, particularly in that pilot episode, where they would both zoom in on what he's seeing and just kind of flash the brightness of it to where it's like you're keying in on what he's seeing. You see how he's putting the pieces together.
Yeah.
That was both well written. It was incredibly well shown.
Yeah.
And it had that whimsical sense of humor, and it got to where Psych was doing very themed episodes of this is a riff on this, this is a riff on that. And then it's almost mirror image in some respects of The Mentalist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are a lot of procedural shows that have that outrageous character, that flamboyant hook, that intriguing twist on the whole premise. And this is able to make do without having to go overboard in any of those directions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's again, as a result of that, not as crazy memorable as some of those other shows. But in a fairly crowded TV slate, they're telling a consistently entertaining mystery story every episode.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that the final episode this season had a bit more mystery than resolution, but it was definitely a two-parter to get us to the next season.
Yeah.
It had some bigger name guest stars, I felt. And I'm still wondering, it's like, okay, why did the bad people do what they did? I haven't seen enough for their motive and stuff like this yet, but it's at least a two-parter, so we weren't given it.
See, I'm torn between that and why were our leading characters their pawns?
Yes, clearly there's something personal. They were targeted.
But the note said nothing personal. Were we convenient pawns? That's the question I came out with.
To me, something's going on. There's more story to be told, and the question is what and why.
Well, and in terms of for next season, we've been watching Matt Shade learn to be a PI, up his game, improve his skills. And now we've ended this season putting him in a position where he's kind of got to prove the last two seasons he's learned something along the way.
Yes, he's got to bail Angie out.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the other person who they introduced really at the tail end of that episode the federal agent, it, to me, has got to be in that first episode of next season. And that was one of the guys who was one of the leads on Haven.
Yeah.
And was also in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for part of season six. Yeah. Very brief part. So, I mean, they're getting some people who can do lead of show, you know, quality stuff for some of these other, I don't say otherwise smaller parts, but it gives them a lot more to work with. And I think this is part and parcel of it's being done in Toronto. There are a lot of talented actors, both of recognizable caliber and also bit players.
Yeah.
That haven't built up that resume, haven't been a lead, well, but are good.
There are a lot of show leads that won't do guest starring parts, no matter basically how much material it has, simply because SAG, the Actors Guild, has put a cap on how much guest stars can be paid. Famously, back in the 90s, there was one actor from soap operas who let it be known he would only do guest starring bits on primetime TV, whether it was an hour episode or a two-hour movie, if it was 1 minute of screen time or less.
Because that's how much he could...
Because that was all the pay was worth to him.
Wow.
Because he was going to have to take at least a day off from the soap opera.
Yeah, and I get that. I get that. You're losing this kind of income, so the opportunity cost.
Well, but the pay for a one-hour drama as a guest star was less than 1 day on the soap opera. So, you know, financially, it does kind of make sense. But when somebody is heard to have made that demand...
No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah. He actually took, it was something like 7 or 8 days off to be in the film Titanic because it was just such a monumental film and everybody knew leading up to it, it would be. But that was considered a big deal that he would do that because of the reputation he'd built.
Yeah.
So I can see where it's hard for a show, especially in Toronto, if they're trying to get LA actors.
Well, Emma Lahanna, the one who'd been the Yellow Dino Thunder Ranger, was also on Haven, is doing Cloak and Dagger and stuff. But if it's one of those things, obviously Haven's ended. Cloak and Dagger only does so many episodes, so it's not like she's busy year round or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Booking a spot like this probably is a smart move for her.
Yeah.
You know, The other one, the other Power Ranger actor, Chris Vallette or whatever, I think has also done episodes of Discovery. I think he's one of the random bridge officers that we occasionally see.
And Discovery is filming up there.
Yeah. So I think for some people, getting those gigs of just guest spot for, you know, procedural episode, it works for them. Others, yeah, maybe not so much. I mean, how they landed William Shatner, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. In part, there's the he's Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me wonders if he and Jason Priestley over the years have done similar charity stuff.
Similar charity stuff. Somehow, well, Sean Piller is one of the people behind this, who's the son of Michael Piller, who had been on behind the scenes of Next Gen and Deep Space Nine, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek, yeah. Shatner. So, I mean, there's some of that, possibly. But again, it's a fun show. I like how they've got a well-rounded supporting cast.
Yes.
And they use them well.
They really do. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure why we go to the diner as much as we do. It's like they wanted a pseudo office to have meetings at.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that out either, because some of those scenes either would have made sense to do at their office or at Matt's house.
The only angle for me that it worked at or worked from, really, is they wanted to show that when his dad, Don, basically got forced into retirement by work, that doesn't mean you have to sit at home all day. That doesn't mean that you're not good for something. There is a second act out there, and it could be something you never knew was a dream you wanted to make come true.
It opened up plot lines for him.
Yeah.
Both the girlfriend aspect and just he's doing stuff. For me, where the diner worked out the best was particularly near the end when, like, Jules and Zoe met up, had some discussions or whatever.
Yeah.
They could have done Jules swinging by the office or something, but it would have felt a little odd.
Yeah.
So I think there was a rationale for why they did it. And this is a smart enough writing team that I know they had a plan of, let's do this because it'll facilitate.
Well, and the diner certainly worked out well in the episode where Shade was a taxi driver that may or may not have been taken hostage.
Yeah, yeah. They needed somewhere that was private and could do that. And again, it worked out. The writing staff here is cognizant of how to tell a story, how to make it work, and what you need to do to set certain things up.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, we'll get an episode, it's like, I didn't know Maz has a sister.
Yes.
But, you know, they can insert some stuff into the backstory through some exposition early on, and okay, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, we haven't really heard of the sister since, but haven't needed to either.
Yeah.
So, it's a fun show. I think they're doing well. Ended on definitely a bit of a cliffhanger. And they'd done a little of that last season with the, oh, what's the letter from Dad kind of thing.
Yes, that's right.
But to me, that was an unresolved thing. This was an actual cliffhanger. First episode has to deal with the jeopardy they find themselves in at the end.
Yes.
And I get it. I'm just not the world's biggest fan of that sort of end of season aspect.
I agree.
But it's common. My annoyance with it is when it happens on the final season of a series where they're using it almost to get that next season.
Yes.
There is a third season for this, so that's not a problem here. We know we've got 12 episodes at least to wrap this up. I don't know if there's going to be a fourth.
I hope there is. I'm enjoying the show.
I have not heard anything indicating there will not be.
To me, this is a very light, relaxing, kick back, get into it show, but you don't find yourself fretting afterwards about the plot leading to the next one, that kind of thing. It's just an in-the-moment entertainment.
It's great casual viewing.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to take this series and shuffle the order of the episodes, there'd be where did this assistant come from? Or where is Jules at with Liam in this point? Or what's going on? There'd be some of that. But in terms of the actual what's going on in the mystery, yeah, not a problem.
Yeah.
And those character moments that are sprinkled throughout add flavor to it. It's not like I missed an episode of like when 24 was on.
Yeah.
You miss an episode, forget it. You might be out for the rest of the season.
Well, and it's not like the show Homeland, where at the end of every episode, there was this reveal.
Yeah.
That left you rethinking what you'd watched, wondering what that meant for what was coming, replanning kind of the, well, I thought the mystery was unwinding this way, but maybe it's going a different way than I thought.
Babylon 5 was the same way. You'd go all the way up, you get something at the end, it's like, I need to reassess my theories.
Yeah.
And there's some great joy in that if you've got a well-written show.
Yes.
And but there are a couple of times where that's a ton of fun, but it's also nice to have shows where I don't need to puzzle out everything in the universe.
Exactly. Yes.
So it's, I think they did really well with how they put this show together. The introduction of the assistant is really the only retooling I felt they did so far. And I think that the casting, they picked really well.
They did.
For the leads.
Yeah, they really did.
I mean, Jason Priestley, whether you love him or hate him, he's doing a good job in this role.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the dad jokes. He's got the, you know, the range to do what they need the character to do. And really where I think the casting did outstanding was the father and daughter for that character.
That's what I was thinking. Don and Jules.
Yeah. They got some really great actors for that. And it humanizes everything. If it had just been Matt and Angie and their PIs, I don't know that it would have had quite the staying power.
I agree with that.
Because they could have done all the scenes with Matt and Angie in the car with him having the angst over Jules, and we could have never met Jules. There have been shows like that.
The Jenny Piccolo of the series.
Even if you look at like Hawaii 5-0 and the bickering between, you know,
McGarrett and Dano.
Yeah. There's aspects of that where you don't need all the backstory and meeting the ex-wives and stuff like that. But here, we get to see Jules' side of the thing, too.
Yes.
You know, so it's fun. It's well done. But it's not, again, one of those amazing, oh my God, shows. And that to me is its brilliance.
Yes.
Is it's just a really well-executed casual viewing show.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.